Hello, I'm Jeff Smith, and welcome to The Secrets of Success. Throughout my life, I've been fascinated by one single question, and it's how do successful people become successful? What is it that makes that big difference in our lives? Over the last 40 years, I've interviewed rich people, famous people, and many millionaires to find out their secrets of success and to share them here with you. Of course, success is not always measured in money. And in these programs, I'm looking at many different success stories from people in all walks of life. I want to find out what makes them tick, how they overcame adversity to keep on going, and I want to extract those magical nuggets of wisdom so that you too can implement the secrets of success into your own life. In today's episode, I'm talking with Fitz Kohler. She describes herself as noisy, bossy, and compelling. This has got to be an interesting one. Fitz is among the most prominent fitness experts and race announcers in the United States of America. With a master's degree in exercise and sports sciences and decades of experience teaching fitness worldwide, Fitz has helped countless people live better and longer by making fitness understandable, attainable, and probably most of all, fun. But she's faced her challenges. In 2019, Fitz was diagnosed with breast cancer, and her once healthy, athletic body was totally brutalized by 15 months of chemotherapy, radiation, and multiple surgeries. However, instead of shutting down, this noisy and bossy lady turned up the volume on her career and her life. She strategically orchestrated her own cancer comeback from being sick, scrawny, and weak to becoming a strong Boston Marathon finisher. Her memoir, My Noisy Cancer Comeback, Running at the Mouth While Running for My Life, was released in 2020 and has been a great source of motivation for those facing hardships in many areas of their lives. In her free time, Fitz enjoys water sports, strength training, obstacle racing, animals, hugs, I live this one, sarcasm, and then getting muddy, Jeep Wrangler, and of course travel. In today's program, she's going to share inspirational lessons from her cancer crushing whirlwind to convince you that you too can do hard things as well. So let's bring in the incredible woman herself. Welcome to the show, Fitz Kohler.
Thank you for having me, Jeff. I'm so looking forward to our conversation.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you here today. You're looking amazing. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm 100%. I'm like 150% every day.
150%. Is that possible? Is it really possible?
Yeah. Yes. I think
okay.
So, yeah.
Cool. All right. Yeah. So I can't wait to find out about your amazing life, your accomplishments. But before we do that, I want to find out more about you, Fitz. So, three questions to get us off the mark. So, where were you born? What was life like for you as a child? And what were your dreams and aspirations as you were growing up?
So, I was born in Hollywood, Florida, the very southern, one of the most southern points of the United States. Hot, sticky, sunny. My days were filled with time at the beach, time getting the sand out of my nooks and crannies because of being at the beach. We were a sporty family. We were always outdoors. I had siblings and I had two parents, and one was really good and one was challenging. But yeah, I was raised in a middle class family, taught to work hard. And I enjoyed my upbringing. And then what was the question you asked? I forget what your third question was.
Yeah, what were your dreams and aspirations as you were growing up?
You know, I think they varied. I think they absolutely varied. I thought I wanted to be a singer. Like it was, I think in sixth grade, I said I wanted to win a Grammy Award. Now, mind you, I have the worst singing voice on planet Earth. So I thought that was a good idea. But I think really I wanted to be engaged with people. I think those were my dreams. I'd see massive groups of people and I'd want to be a part of that in some regard. And I did start teaching fitness very young. I was just 15 when I began. And so I didn't really know my career would be made out of this, but I could tell you that I loved it right away. It was something that I just felt so natural with and happy doing. So yeah, I had some weird dreams, but here I am.
Here we go. Now, lots of people ask me, how do I find my purpose? So it sounded like you found your purpose quite early on.
So I did, but I didn't even know it. It took a while. So I also, besides loving fitness, I love freedom. I'm obsessed with freedom. I'm a raging patriot. I love America. I love what we stand for. And I thought I wanted to run for office. You know, contributing to this incredible country was high on my agenda. And so I thought about joining the military. And then I thought, well, who are you fooling? You're not going to go stand in front of gunfire. So maybe you could run for office. Maybe that would be my contribution. And so I had kind of focused in on running for governor for the state of Florida. I thought that would be my contribution. And up until recently, as politics have become very, very ugly, that's been on my agenda. Right now, it's off the agenda because I don't deal well with nasty, nasty people. But I went to the University of Florida, which is an incredible school. Go Gators. And my intention, I got a political science degree, and I was going to become a lawyer because I thought back in the day, so naively, that you had to be a lawyer to be a politician. And none of the adults in my life ever shook me and said, no, dummy, you can be anything. Just find a great job that makes you happy. I thought, well, and I would tell them, I'm going to become a lawyer so I could be the governor. And they're like, okay. So finally, at the end of my undergraduate career, I took this class, I think it was called career planning. And I was, again, going to go to law school. And the teacher said, make a top 10 list of things you love to do just for fun, things that make you happy, bring joy. Top 10 things you hate doing. And so I make these lists, and on the top of my love list, now, mind you, I'd already been teaching fitness, not only for the university, teaching on television, teaching overseas. I had been teaching fitness at a very high level at that point. So on the top of my love list were number one, sports and fitness. Number two was helping people. And number three was music. And so I look and I think, well, I'm already kind of doing what I love to do, right? The top two things on my hate list, number one was sitting down, and number two was reading. And what do attorneys do all day?
Homework.
They sit and they read. And so I had this very stark contrast in front of me. And I was like, okay, I'm definitely not going to do law. That's a bad choice for me. How do I turn this job that most people have with fitness into an actual profession, into a career? And that's where things really took off for me.
Okay, so how old were you at this stage when you decided, this is it, I'm going to do the fitness thing?
I think I was about 21. Okay. That would be my guess.
Okay, so still quite young then, still quite young. So how did life unfold for you then?
Well, yeah, young, but at 21, I was kind of 6 years into my career. And so the point at which things really turned for me and I had clarity over how to make this into a career, because you think about most fitness instructors, they've got a license out of a Cracker Jack box and they teach one class a week or they do personal training or maybe they don't. And I wanted it to be a real career that paid for a home and paid for cars and allowed me to live debt-free and go on vacation. And so it was really important that I figured out the right path to that. And so when I started hosting a television show, there was a TV producer who had an audition process, and I auditioned, chose me. The first thing I learned is that I was equally comfortable in front of a camera as I was in front of a large group of individuals. And that's a skill that's not necessarily translatable for me.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then once the show started airing, I would be out and about and strangers would come up and say, are you Fitz? Yes. I love your show. I do it every day. I've lost 17 pounds, or I do it all the time and I have no more back pain. And every single time that happened, it blew me back, because the opportunity to help strangers, you know, to connect with and help strangers was so exciting for me. And so I definitely thought, okay, TV. I love TV. That's going to be my avenue. And then I started writing articles. And I also, you'll enjoy this, for about 10 years, I competed as a full contact kickboxer. And so they were constantly doing articles on me. But then I finally, it's another long story, but I asked the editor, I said, can I write an article for you? And he said, sure. And so my very first article was called How to Kick People in the Head. And so the article came out in this national magazine. And a few weeks later, I got a handwritten letter by a guy in Kentucky who said, Fitz, I just wanted to let you know, I've been doing combat sports and martial arts for a very long time. And thanks to you, I finally kicked someone in the head. And I thought, he kicked someone in the head. That's incredible. That was like me kicking that guy in Kentucky in the head. And so I was able to absorb that it was mass media I was after. It was the TV. It was radio. It was books. Any medium I could use to reach out and grab people, as many as possible, became my mission. And that was really how I was able to make a career out of this, because corporations pay me and they pay me very well to do what I do.
That's awesome. 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 Absolutely. However, you had a wonderful career. Things are rolling along. And then in 2019, you were diagnosed with breast cancer.
Correct.
So what happened?
Well, interestingly enough, I went in for a mammogram at the very end. It was December 27th of 2018, sparkling clean. There was nothing on my scans that shouldn't have been there. Less than 7 weeks later, I was in a hotel bathroom at a race. I got out of the shower and I rubbed my underboob like that and I felt it. I found a lump and I knew what it was. I just thought, ah, Jesus, cancer. And so I picked up the phone within 30 seconds. And this is what everybody needs to hear, is that when your body tells you something's wrong, you have to listen to it. Not wait a week, not Google it, not cry to your mom and your friends and ask, what should I do? You need to take firm action on your own behalf. And so I picked up this phone, and within a week I had appointments and scans and biopsies. And I not only had this sizey lump in my breast, it had already spread to lymph nodes. Wow. Like, I had a very aggressive, terrifying form of cancer that was definitely trying to get me. And if I had waited until that follow-up mammogram the next December, you would be talking about me instead of to me. There's no way I'd be here. So I'm told you have cancer. And I promise you, Jeff, I'm the most optimistic person in the world. Like, negative Nellies annoy me. But I definitely thought I was dying. I just thought, you know, I have I'm the perfect vision of health and happiness. I have the perfect family, perfect career. I will definitely make the perfect tale of tragedy. So I thought for sure I was going to die. But my oncologist, very smart, very caring, finally assured me, Fitz, you are not. You have some suffering ahead of you, but we will get you through this and you will come out on the other side. And so, you know, that was a good point for me. And then I made some really good decisions that made it all even better.
Ah, that's wonderful. There's a very important message there. You know, I'll share a story of mine with you also. And that is, when you find something like that, it's important to do something and talk about it rather than keeping it to yourself. So I had a similar experience myself. So I too was in the shower one day, cleaning myself up, and I felt a lump on one of my testicles.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I remember it, and I froze. I think, oh, my God. I get out of the shower, get dressed, and I went downstairs into my office, and I just remember standing there. And I knew I was going to go to the doctors or the hospital or whatever. And I'd got dressed, and my wife came in and she said, you don't look right. What's the matter? And I said, I've just had a shower and I found a lump on one of my testicles. She said, right. So what are you doing here then? Which is a great response, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a couple of things. One, I was able to talk about it. I'm able to talk about it now, which is also good. But then my wife was also supportive to say, well, get the hell out of here, get to the doctors and get seen. And that's the most important part in all of it, isn't there? So I want to expand on that a little. So Fitz, there might be a lady listening now who finds a lump in her breast in the shower. What message would you give? What kind of things goes through people's heads at that point?
You know, it's fear. It's fear, and it's okay to be fearful. It's human to be fearful, but it's not okay to be frozen. It's not okay to be frozen by fear. Your fear should motivate you to take action. And I mean, there's all sorts of cancers, right? There's all sorts of cancers. There's little pinky twitches that end up as diagnosed as MS. You know, there's a lot of things that go on, but the reality is you have to bring your body in for those annual checkups, all of them. Get your skin checked, get your eyes checked, get your breasts, your testes, your whatever it is, get it checked out. We all bring our vehicles in to get checked out every 6 months, every year. So, you know, if we crowd total our vehicle and it goes away, okay, we get a new one. We don't have the same opportunity with our body, right? Our life. So you got to get those annual exams, and then you have to be your own best advocate. I've been traveling around the country for years now, telling people these are your hands. This is your stuff. You are free. And I'm like groping myself, but it's okay. Yeah. It's okay if I do it to me. Check, feel around. Look, if you see something interesting or different or strange, or it feels weird, bring it in for the checkup. A doctor is not going to come to your house in the middle of the night, crawl in your room, lift up the covers, look around, check and make sure everything looking good. You have to be your own advocate. And, you know, they say it a lot. Early detection saves lives. Early detection saved mine. Clearly, it saved yours. You know, too many people ignore symptoms of a heart attack. I mean, it really, health is not just about exercise and eating right. It's about general awareness and having a relationship with some sort of medical provider.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to put context on what you said, I checked myself out and took action. I'm okay. My brother checked himself out, found something, didn't do anything about it. 2 years, he's dead.
So sorry.
Yeah.
And that's going to make you cranky.
Yeah. Well, the point is, check yourself, but then do something about it. There's no need to be quiet about it. My brother decided to do something when it was far too late, far, far too late. And that's just the message I want to get out there. Yeah. So you were this super successful fitness instructor. You've been hit with breast cancer. You've got a journey in front of you now. What happened to your career then?
So, you know, it could have gone either way, right? I think in most people's mindset, oh, you're diagnosed with cancer. So my treatment schedule was 15 months of chemo, and I was beat up by chemo. I was not only bald and gray, and my stomach was exploding nonstop. Imagine living with a violent stomach bug for 6 months straight. That was the first 6 months of my journey. And then I had another 9 months of lesser chemo, but we nicknamed it Godzilla to give you the spectrum of how it was still horrible. I lost 11% of my weight. I'm already thin. Can you imagine if I was much thinner? So 15 months of chemo, I had 33 rounds of radiation, some surgeries. And so knowing that was in front of me, I would say most people would say like, oh, take time off, you know, stay home and rest. And I could have done that. And if I did do that, Fitness, the business I had built, the brand I had built for decades would have been decimated. It would not have existed. It'd be gone. But instead, I had two big decisions right before I started treatment, and I had no idea how sick I was going to be or what was going to go on. But I decided, A, if my kids had a special event, I was going to be there. If they had a show, a ceremony, a sport, I was showing up come hell or high water, no matter what. I was not letting cancer take that from me. And there's a difference between the victim mentality, and I chose to be the victor. I was like, you can take my hair, but you're not taking time with Ginger and Parker. And then the other thing I decided was that it was not going to take my career, that no matter what happened, I was still going to do those awesome jobs I was hired to do. Those stages I stand on are coveted. People would kill for my positions, but I earned my rightful spot on those stages. I was the right person for those events and to take care of those wonderful people. So I just decided, screw it. I am not backing down from this. I will figure it out. And so, so those are two big decisions I made up front. I never missed a kid thing. Thank goodness. Now they had rides to school and things when I couldn't give them, but I never missed a special event. And then when it came to my career, it became the wild ride. That's where chaos ensued because my career requires me to get on a plane most every week of the year. It's 30 something weeks of the year. And so I would show up at the airport sick and gray. And I mean, my poor husband would watch how sick I was. And then he would drive me to the airport at 4 a.m. and I'd get in line at TSA and he was going to say goodbye. And he'd say, how are you going to do this? And I would just say, I just am. I will figure it out. And, you know, there's a lot of unknowns, a lot of uncertainties. The one thing I had full faith in was Fitz Kohler. And I hope everybody has earned that status in their own mind. You know, you have to believe in yourself. And was it bonkers? Sure. I mean, I look back and I think, what was I thinking? But this was the right path for me. And so I would go and I would figure it out. Sometimes we would have IV fluids set up for me in different states at different events. But because I kept working, because I never missed 1 minute of work, thanks to this crappy disease, my business tripled during my 15 months of chemo, even with the COVID crap shutting it down at the very end. My business tripled because I chose to be in charge of me. And if I hadn't, I'm pretty convinced I'd be rebuilding from ground up. It would have been a mess. And now I have books out and, you know, I do not wear ribbons. I am not cancer. Cancer is not in the first, you know, three words of my byline. I don't walk around saying everybody, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I did live by example and I held down the fort and I did what I needed to do professionally without telling everyone that I was a pity party mess. I told people up front because I was going to go bald, I had no choice but to go public and say, hey guys, this is what's going on. I never wore a wig. It's not who I am. But when I was going through the illness, I never told people I was sick. I never told people I was suffering. I just said, you know, my role is to be a beacon of health and happiness. That's what my brand is about. It's about health. So if I would have gotten online and said, I'm sleeping on the hotel bathroom floors, the rooms are spinning, this is really hard, I think people might have been put off. Or yeah. Instead of receiving health and happiness and being uplifted, they might have been sad. But I'll stop talking in a minute because I know I could go on forever. But the magic of doing what you love is all the things that were wrong with me. So I really did. I spent a lot of nights on a hotel bathroom floor. I mean, it was awful. But at 4:30 in the morning, my alarm would go off and I'd get up and get dressed. I'd bring my bald head and my sick body over to the start line. And the second I stepped on those stages, absolutely everything that was wrong with me disappeared. I got to focus exclusively on the incredible events I was hosting, the thousands of wonderful people that showed up for athletic adventure and fun. And I got to be full force Fitz Kohler as long as I had runners on the course. The second, the last finisher cross, and I'd break down pretty quickly, but it was glorious. It was so great. And I hope everybody has chosen a career they love so much that A, they would do while so sick, and B, one that will lift them out of the darkness and doldrums on very dark days. So I'm considering it all a big win, Jeff.
For sure. And in your case, cancer didn't happen to you. It happened for you.
Oh, that's a nice way of saying it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were to go back to 2019 and check the box, have cancer or not, of course I would not have it. But I can't uncheck that box. It happened and I made lemonade. I made the best decisions I could for me at the time. I was self-involved in the fact that I couldn't tell people I was sick. That was for me. You know, maybe it would have been helpful for people to know, oh, she's human or whatever. It would have been harder for me. I really had a hard time and I was hanging by a thread. But, you know, and aftermath, I've been completely honest. You know, the memoir is very detailed, and you know, it's amazing how many people that come up and they say, "Oh my God, I ran that race. I had no idea that was going on." I say, "Oh, that's by design. Thank you so much. It makes me feel like I achieved even more during that time."
Absolutely. Okay, so you've written a number of books. Yeah. There, you have a couple coming out this year, 2023, in January. We'll talk about those in a moment, but let's go back to the memoir for a moment. At what point? So you were diagnosed with breast cancer in 2019.
Yeah.
Your world undoubtedly falls apart. You undoubtedly think, what the hell am I going to do here? Mm-hmm. To use your words, I just made a decision that it's not going to beat me. I'm going to get up and go. Let's talk about that first, because the way you said it is, yeah, I just made a decision. And lots of people would just like to make a decision.
Yeah.
But what did you go through? What was the process you went through to make you so strong, let me say?
So perspective. Perspective has always been my bestie. My guiding light has been perspective. And you know, I remember many years ago, I was in the grocery store, and we have the first two lanes in America are called 10 items or less. So if you just have a few items you can check out quickly, come in this lane. So I get in the 10 items or less lane, and there's a woman who's about 4,000 years old in front of me, and she's got 100 items on the conveyor belt, and she's writing a check. So I'm in a hurry. She's doing everything wrong, but she's a cute old lady. I can't say anything. I just internally, I'm stewing. And so I'm stewing. And then I look over to check out aisle number two. And there's a maybe five-year-old girl in a beautiful red, blue, and yellow, shiny snow white gown. And she's bald. And I thought, oh, what that poor child must be going through to have cancer as a baby. And here in Gainesville, Florida, we have pediatric oncology center. So there's a lot of kids like that around here. And I thought, how petty am I to be upset over this stupid line and this delay when this family is going through such hard times? It was the child and the parents I was so concerned for. And so from that point on, my mantra became, it's not cancer. And so I'm the weirdo who gets stuck in a traffic jam, you know, a 2-hour traffic jam. And instead of complaining about being stuck in the traffic jam, all I can think about is how grateful I am not to be in the car accident that caused the traffic jam. And so whenever anything goes wrong, the car breaks down or I spill a drink or someone's mean, I think, oh, it's not cancer. And so eventually for me, it was cancer, right? So I couldn't say it's not cancer. But what I did think is at least I'm an adult with it. Could you imagine being a little kid going through cancer or being a parent? So perspective on every single freaking thing. And I mean that. For me, it was, okay, I'm not a kid with cancer. It's not my kid with cancer. I'm going to put on my big girl panties and I'm going to figure it out. Now, I'm a medical wimp. I'm terrified of needles. Blood draws make me cry every single time. They probably drew blood for me 100 times. They gave me 600 shots. I was a pincushion for a year and a half. And I did cry, but I never felt pity for myself. I chose to pursue those passions. I think that was my lifeblood. If I had not gone on the road to go announce and do keynotes and things like that, all I would have been was sick. And that would have been very depressing. I was completely lifted up. This weird world where now people are like, oh, you're sick. Hide out, wear a mask, cover up, don't see people, isolate. I think it's terrible because just the opposite benefited me so greatly. And then lastly, I just chose to be positive. You know, it's a clear decision. Did I cry? Every single day. But usually I would do it alone, so I didn't burden my family with it. I'm not recommending that. If you got a family you can cry with, great. My kids were little. I didn't want to put that on. So I would just sit in my car or I would sit in my bathroom and I would boo-hoo. And then I would dry up my tears and I would get on with it. And I would find something to be happy. Even if I was just stuck lying in bed, just, you know, you don't get any extra points for being the most pathetic person in the room. And for me, I lifted myself up with those little mental strategies. And I talk a lot about those things in the book. And apparently those strategies are working for many other cancer patients too.
That's wonderful. We'll get onto that book in a moment. Yeah. I just want to backtrack a little.
Yeah.
There's always a way of reframing the situation to express gratitude for what you have. And I think a lot of people miss out on that. I used to travel a lot, maybe 50, 60,000 miles a year driving. Wow. And one of the products of that is you get caught in traffic jams, right?
Yeah.
And I remember my wife called me one day and she said, "What time are you going to be home?" And I said, "It would have been an hour from now, but I'm stuck on the motorway. It's stopped, engine off. So I guess I'm going to be stuck here a couple of hours." And she said, "Oh." And I gave a phrase then that my family has adopted. And it is better late than late. I said, someone at the front of this queue has probably lost a mommy or a daddy. And who am I to complain sitting here in a nice warm car? You know, so better late than late.
I'm picking that up, Jeff. And yeah. You know, it's so interesting to me on this subject. We talk about you want to talk about success. I love talking about success. And I think you're setting yourself up for failure if you're the person who shows up in the office complaining about traffic. If you always want to be like, "Hey, everybody, just want to let you know, I sprained my ankle this weekend," or "I fell," and you're not lifting anybody up with your tales of woe. I mean, it's not that you can't have a friend, a confidant to talk with, but if you show up to work every day complaining about traffic or complaining about this, people are going to want to start to avoid you, and they're not going to elevate you. You're certainly not getting a promotion. They're not going to trust you with their clients because you may drag them down. And what do they want? They want to be known as the people who lift you up. And so I think it's really a good habit to adjust and perspective. With perspective, everything's better.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, every time I've been stuck in a traffic jam, I've got home. Dinner's yes. been on the table. I mean, what's to complain about? Wonderful. So, talking about reframing things.
Yeah.
And perspective, your memoir. Let's talk about that one.
Yeah.
So, how did it come about, first of all? Why did you decide to write this book? Who is it for? What will they get from it? And why you?
Okay, there's a bunch of questions. You may have to help me out.
I'll remind you.
Okay, so why the book? You know, so I was being very clandestine about my hardships while I was going through it. People could see my bald head, but other than that, I kept saying, "I'm fine, I'm fine." But what happened is things kept getting really weird. Not only was I getting sick, but things were going haywire. And so I'll give you a couple of examples. I started chemo, and then 2 weeks later, I was hosting the Los Angeles Marathon, which has almost 30,000 people. It's a big event here in the United States. And my hair came out on that stage. I lost about 50% of my hair on stage announcing races, which, if you can imagine, was very... It was a mind F. It was a weird day. We made the best of it. There was a lot of funny stuff that happened, traumatic and funny, but I thought, oh, somebody would really get a kick out of hearing this story. And then I flew home and I came home and then my nose started running and I thought, oh, I'm allergic. Cause a lot of these chemo drugs, people are highly allergic to them and in very bad ways. So my nose starts running. And I think, Jesus, another allergy. I also wasn't just bald. I had like bumps, irritation bumps, rashes, you know, everything was going wrong. But again, I wasn't going to tell anybody. So I show back up in California at a race. And there's a woman, Dana Sabatka, who had the year prior finished breast cancer treatment and ran a half marathon to celebrate it. And I was part of her celebration. I met her at the event, but made a royal stink, like, wow, look at this breast cancer survivor doing this great thing. So she knows I have it. She comes running through the finish line. I say, "Hey, Dana, come on over here. I'm doing my best, but I have all these tissues on my desk, on my table at the finish line." And she comes over. She goes, "How are you?" And I said, "Oh, I'm just fine." She goes, you're just fine. I said, oh, I have some allergies. No big deal. And she goes, you don't have allergies. I said, yeah, I do. She goes, no, you don't have allergies. I said, Dana, my nose is running like a sieve. She goes, you don't have allergies. You don't have any nostril hair. And I said, what? She goes, you don't have any nostril hair. That's why your nose is running. I said, you're kidding me. And I leaned my head back and I said, look. And she looked up my nose and she goes, there's no nostril hair. And I was like, ah, that's it. Nobody warned me of that. About a month later, I'm in Big Sur, California, which is a beautiful place. I wake up in the morning and at that point, I'm everything's bald. I'm like a moving plastic bowl. Take a shower, 4:30 in the morning, and I get out and I look in the mirror for the first time. And my eyes have always been gray, like gray blue, but mostly gray, something that people have commented on throughout my whole life. I look in the mirror and my eyes are now navy blue saucers. They're not gray. There's no pupil. It's just navy blue saucers. And I think, oh, what the hell is that? Like, that's weird. And so I had these thoughts. First, I thought, well, should I call 911? But what am I going to say? Help, my eyes have changed colors. Like, what are they going to do? They're going to send an insane, you know, they're going to send a psychological, you know what I'm saying, a psychiatrist over to me. So I think, well, okay, I can't call 911. And then I think, well, I can see, and there's thousands of people waiting for me at a start line. So I need to get on with the show. I'm just going to figure it out. So then I started thinking, well, I'm getting dressed. Well, maybe I'm just making stuff up. Maybe I'm just seeing things and my eyes are normal. And so at whatever time, my announcing partner, Rudy, comes and knocks on the door to get me. And he was very kind. People were so generous with me during these times, just being really supportive. So he knocks on the door and I open it up. And the first thing he says is, what the hell happened to your eyes? And I was like, I know. What happened? So, you know, nobody told me I'd lose my nostril hair. Nobody told me my eyes would change colors. And there was all of these other bonkers things that continued to happen. And all I kept thinking is, oh, I got to tell people. They will get such a good laugh out of this. That's actually, that was the inspiration for telling people something, was the fact that it was so crazy. It was funny. And so I didn't know if I was going to write an article or maybe just do a podcast and tell people. But then I realized the goodness I had done for myself with perspective, passions, positivities. You know, I had this mantra, I can do hard things, that came from a nightmare experience in an MRI. And then Fitz Kohler started kicking in. And I thought, you know what, I can really help people if I speak out. You know, if I tell my tale, I'll be able to help other people through it. And so that's when I started putting things down and created the memoir, and it's done really well. So who is it for? Well, it's definitely for anyone going through cancer, recovering from cancer, the cancer community at large. I think those people have enjoyed it. I would say over 50% of these books, this book right here, my noisy cancer comeback, these have been purchased as gifts. So someone will say, hey, my dad was just diagnosed with brain cancer. Can I get them your book? I get that every single day. Someone reaches out and says, my favorite person has cancer. Please get them your book. So it's definitely for cancer community, caregivers, and so forth. And those people, you know, they identify with it. And what they say is, you know, I cried. I had no idea that went on. And you tell some hard stories. I cried, but I laughed a whole lot more. And that makes me happy because, as you could tell, joy is my thing. But the other thing I love most is when people reach out and say, This book helped me through the hard times. I made better decisions for myself because of that book. And I just changed course and things got better. So that's a real value to me. The other real audience for the book are probably those negative Nellies who need a kick in the can and need a real lesson on perspective, and, you know, the running community. So I'm a bit of a figurehead in the running community. So those people take interest just in me. So that's who that book is for. That's what it's about. Did I cover your, did I answer all your questions, Jeff?
Yeah, you did. But I'm going to ask you a whole lot more. Yes, you did. You did great. Thank you. So we covered why. Let's talk about the how. So you've never written a book before. You think, okay, I'm going to start writing stuff down. And at some point you said, okay, let's make it a book.
Yeah.
What happened? What was the transition? And the reason I'm asking you, Fitz, is because someone might be listening now who's traveling your journey and they think, you know, I have a booking me, but I've got no idea how to get started. So what words of advice can we give to them? And what was your journey like?
Okay. So to clarify, I had written a book before, but it was a cookbook. So it was very different. It's the Everything Flat Belly Cookbook. It was published traditionally. I had a publisher, and that was also a very, you know, time consuming, effortful process, but they handled a lot of the bells and whistles, and I didn't have to. I did not want to go back through a traditional publisher. I like control. I like to be in control of my brand. I've produced other things in the past, like workout DVDs. So I just decided I'm going to figure this out, right? So the writing process wasn't very hard. I'm a talented writer. I've written many things, articles and so forth. So that didn't scare me. I think if you'd like to write a book, hopefully you're a good writer. That's gotta be the place you start. I hope you got A's in English when you were a kid, or whatever language you speak. So that's a start part. You have to have a story. And then there's all these great resources. So my favorite resource, which I love referring people to, because I think she does self-publishing like I do fitness. She really wants the best for people. She has a business called Book Launchers, where you can hire her to do the editing and cover design and all that stuff for her team. But she also just says, here's how to do it yourself. If you want to do it yourself, if you're willing to take on the burden, which it is a big process, here's how. And so every single day, so I was writing the book, and writing wasn't hard for me. You know, that whole part came naturally. But, and the world had shut down by this point. So I'd go walking my dogs, and I'd get on YouTube to the Book Launchers channel. And she has all sorts of little clips on how to, and all sorts of different avenues of self-publishing, and watch her 4 to 6 minute videos and just listen and learn and learn and learn. And so I took my skill set, and then I combined them with her expertise that she was guiding me with, and simple stuff like your chapter titles. My book goes chronologically. It's interesting. Well, they'll tell you with a memoir, do not do it chronologically, but I made the executive decision that with cancer, dates matter. People want to know. They go, oh, well, when were you diagnosed? Well, when was your last clean mammogram? When did you start chemo? You know, so I put it chronologically. It's all in there. But I could have made my chapter titles. It's actually by month, but I didn't make the chapter titles October 2019. This chapter 5 is called Blind Faith in Myself. I think this is really important, because this is why people pick up your book. Some of my other chapter titles: Mascots and Mosh Pits, Small but Mighty, The Thing with Pink Ribbons, Cancer Can Be Funny, # Flush Twice. So Julie with Book Launcher, she told me, make your chapter titles interesting and enticing. And she told me so many other things. Hire a professional cover designer, hire a professional editor. If you want to have a book that, you know, mine can sit on a shelf next to Michelle Obama's book, and it looks like they came from the same publisher. You know, they're both high quality, feel good, look good, professional books. Too many people that are doing self-publishing think they're going to create a cover and a Word document, and they're going to self-edit. And then, you know, people, they sell the 4 that their family bought, and that's it. So I think if you have a great story, and number 2, if you have an audience, if you don't have a built-in audience, if you're just Susie Q on the street who doesn't have a fan base, it can be a real challenge to sell those books once they're published, but it's a very rewarding experience, and it's hard, but it's worth it.
What kept you going?
I just wanted it. When I want things, Jeff, oh my gosh.
You know, when people fall off their goals and they say, well, Jeff, why can't I keep going? I say, because you don't want it enough. You don't have a strong enough reason why. And one of the things to think about with your reason why is, what happens if you don't do it?
Right. Well, so those people wouldn't have had the help they needed.
Yeah, for sure. So that's something for listeners to think about. Now, I want to backtrack on a couple of things that you said, okay, because there's some real important things there. First of all, you need a good title for your book, because the eyes buy first. You need a good cover and you need a great title that creates intrigue, that people say, oh, I wonder what that's about. And then they'll flick through the book. And then what they'll do is cast their eyes over the contents. So your chapter titles have got to zing. They have to go, oh, I want to know about that. Oh, I want to know about that. Oh, I want to know about that as well. Hey, I'll buy the book. And you know something? Less than 1% of people that buy books actually read them.
Oh, yeah, that's actually sad. That's a sad statistic.
Yeah, but they get pulled in by the title and the chapter titles.
Yeah, absolutely.
So some very valid points there that I just didn't want to let go by. The other thing is you don't have to design everything yourself. There's lots of ways you can hand things over. So I want to backtrack again. Sorry.
That's okay.
On this occasion, you decided to self-publish.
Yeah.
Why? Because that's an eternal question. Because lots of people say, well, should I go to a publisher or should I self-publish? Yeah. So for you, why for you?
So my first book publishing experience with a publisher was pretty good. Paid in advance and the book did well. And it was, I felt handsomely rewarded for my first book. No problem. Second book, I got my advance, turn in the manuscript, and they say they basically want to add these two chapters full of lies. Now, the most important thing about me is my credentials, my trustability, right? The fact that people believe me. So they wanted to put these two hokey crap chapters in my book promoting supplements like diet pills and powders, which I am a complete opponent of.
Yeah.
And then another chapter that said, these are negative calorie foods, lying to people, suggesting that they could eat certain foods and burn more calories in digestion than they did during consumption. And so I said, absolutely not. You cannot put these. And they said, well, this stuff sells. They were willing to lie to the consumer to steal their money, which as so many other people in fitness are willing to. And so I said, absolutely not. Now, I had a literary agent. I probably should have let her handle this, but I was so livid. I came back and I said, you cannot put my name on those lies. Absolutely not. And so you know what they did? I was listed in the contract as freelance writer, not author. If my title were author, I would have had final control over everything. But I was listed as freelance writer, which meant they had control. Now, I didn't know this. I was younger. I mean, it was just, it's information you don't know unless you know. My agent should have known that. So I fired her and they took my book and they got some hack dietitian, someone with a nutrition degree that was willing to lie. They put her name on my book and sold it.
And so at
that point I decided, nope, I will not give control over my business, my brand. There were other things I wanted for the first book, the cookbook. I wanted to add like a pretty cover or some photos or this. And they said, no, we don't want that. We only want this. And so I complied because it was a first book and it was fine. You know, the things that I wanted were extras. But then when it came down to book number two, gosh, if they would have published that thing with my name on it, I would have been destroyed. You know, again, people hire me because they believe in me. I'm one of the only fitness experts that hasn't sold out society with these lies. And so that's why I did self-publishing. And, you know, I don't think it'll ever happen, but if a publisher wanted to publish my books after a fact, I mean, they would have to come with a hell of a lot of money and that contract would favor me dramatically. Yeah, I've learned the hard way.
Okay, well, there's still decisions that could have been made because you could have said, okay, I've been caught this time. I'll still publish with a publishing house, but now I'll get the proper legal advice and the proper contracts. So why then did you not do that? And instead you went self-publishing, which is a lot more work.
Yes. because they would, I didn't want to allow them to change my content. I am totally gangbusters for editing. I want someone to come and red pen it and say, no, clean it up, shut up, you know, delete that. And I'm happy to do that. But I wasn't willing to let someone change the message of my story. And also they're slow as molasses. Publishers are traditionally very slow. I didn't want to wait 3 years for it to come out. It was almost like I still had the weird little hairdo when it came out. I was striking while the fire was hot, while people were still interested in my story. Yeah. It felt like it needed to be timely and I needed to have full control.
Excellent. Good. Well, I happen to agree with all that as a self-published author myself. So I completely relate to all of that. Okay, so we've got some more books coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell me about those.
There's
two, right? That work together as one.
I am so excited about these, Jeff. You know, it's this reminds me of the old TV show I had where people were saying they were better because of it. These books, I am so motivated. So the memoir, I love the memoir. I'm very proud of the memoir, but it's almost about me, and that feels uncomfortable. These books are about you. It's about you, you, you. Every person, every cancer patient and survivor. And so the first book is Your Healthy Cancer Comeback, Sick to Strong. And it is a guidebook, a manual, a blueprint for anyone going through cancer or recovering from cancer to get past the weakness, the tightness, the inflexibility, the all of the bad stuff, and dig their way out of that hole. And the inspiration for that book came when I hit rock bottom. You know, I had lost far too much weight. I was skeletal and I was weak and I had gone into a gym. Finally, I was able, like I had gotten rid of the violent sickness, that I was able to kind of make that step forward and think, all right, I'm going to start lifting weights again. And I sat down on a machine and I tried to push. I tried to push what I had previously pushed. I had to push it down, drop the weight. And what I found is that I could only lift 20% of what I had previously lifted. I lost 80% of my strength. Now that was evident in the fact that I couldn't open water bottles myself. Sometimes I couldn't open the car door. There was a lot of things going wrong. But when I sat there on the machine, it could have been very, very defeating. You know, if I wasn't a fitness expert at that point, I would have taken my bald head and I would have run crying out of the gym and I might have gone home and cried all day and given up. But instead, I have all this great fitness information in my head and I thought, I know exactly how I'm going to rebuild my body and I'm going to build it back better than before. And I have. But I still go back to that day and put myself in the shoes of somebody without all my knowledge and think, God, that's got to be devastating, you know, and then to live like that, because weakness becomes pain. Tightness leads to pain. Imbalance leads to falls, which leads to pain, which leads to depression. It's a very, very deep, dark hole a cancer patient can fall into. And even if you don't have chemo, you just have surgery. Sometimes these surgeries are nightmare or they amputate body parts. You know, there's so much. So this book was created because I want better for people. You know, I was able to dig myself out of that hole. There is no other competition. Jeff, you look on Amazon, there's nothing in the category. There's some like stupid diet about doing keto during cancer. Hi, no, thank you. There's some sort of juicing nonsense, but there's nobody who's taken all the components of fitness, strength training, flexibility, balance, cardio, nutrition, rest, and then help say, okay, you're in the hospital right now. This is what you can do. You've had radiation, you're burned. This is what you can do. There's a complete center section exercise photos. I'm so excited. There's regular exercises for a person who can stand and do basic things. And then there's exercises in a chair, all photos of how to exercise in the chair. And if you can't exercise in the chair and you're stuck in bed, there's a whole bunch of strength training and stretching moves you can do in bed. And every single time you take the shower, here's stretches you can do in the shower. And then here's stuff you can do in exam room. So the book is brimming, boiling over with information. And I'm so excited because, I mean, how many cancer patients are there right now, Jeff, going through treatment? Millions?
Oh, millions and millions. Millions.
Millions. And there's nothing for them. And some of their doctors aren't even talking to them about this stuff because the poor doctors are stuck with like all the medical concerns. So it's a resource that doesn't exist, and the market of people who need it, and patients and survivors, because when you, just because you're done with treatment doesn't mean you're right. Right. So I'm thrilled about that market. And then what you are excited about, which I'm really
right,
proud
yes,
of.
Yes, right. Let me, because I'm okay, excited now. So reading a book does not make you better. Reading a book does not get you fitter. Reading a book does not make you well. It's what you do. And people struggle with what to do. Now I'm getting all fizzy and excited. So what I love about this book, and what I love about your attitude here, is you've got this book and you say, it's not enough, because it really is about you. And therefore, to make this big difference, we need to plot your progress and what you're doing. And that's why we have the birth of the journal that goes alongside the book. And that, I believe, is what will make all the difference in the world. So, Fitz, back to you. Tell me about this journal.
Okay, so this one's called the Healthy Cancer Comeback Journal, and it's exactly what it sounds like it is, and it's filled with hundreds of incredible prompts for you to write down your specific information. And so we go into the details of your cancer. You'll be able to write your date of diagnosis, your type of diagnosis, your medical providers, your treatment plan, yada, yada. We've got, you know, the advent calendars for Christmas where people check off a day for Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
Got basically an advent calendar for chemo, for radiation, for surgery. So you can chuck off, oh, maybe you have 33 radiation schedule. You can cross them off as you go to get to your finish line. There's prompts to talk about your faith, your feelings, your fears, your family members, who's the best shoulder to cry on. There's so many fun prompts. Well, like, what have you nicknamed your tumor? What have you nicknamed your port? What celebrities do you look like bald? I mean, I got all sorts. Everyone's like, you look like crazy Britney Spears. You look like that black lady from Star Wars, Star Trek. I was like, okay, I'll take all of it. Grace Jones was another one. I apparently look just like bald. So there's a ton of really great prompts for, hopefully to bring out the serious, to document stuff, and then bring out the bright side, the laughing side, great gifts you received, et cetera. It'll keep you busy and entertained, and it'll make hopefully better memories than the bad stuff. And then the last half of the journal, the last 100 pages, are daily fitness logs. And so that's how you take the practical use of what I've taught you in the book and you put it to use there. And you'll jot down like what time you went to bed and woke up. Did you take a nap? How much water did you drink? What kind of exercises did you do, and how do you feel? And then, do you know what strawberry moments are?
No, enlighten me.
Okay, so strawberry moments are something I learned about when my children went to summer camp. They go to a week-long summer camp out in the woods. It's the greatest place on earth for kids. And at the end of every day, each cabin gathers around and the kids go around and reveal their strawberry moments. And strawberry moments are basically your best moment of the day. Now, at summer camp, maybe your strawberry moment is winning a canoe race or making a new friend or hearing your favorite song at the dance. Whatever it is, it's your strawberry moment. So on the daily log, there's a space for strawberry moments, because even if you had surgery today, perhaps one of those nurses was really sweet to you, or perhaps your doctor gave you great news, or perhaps you got a text from a long lost friend. So I got to stop using the word think so much. I know that when you focus on the good things, you're a lot happier, a lot better for it. And there's always a good thing. Maybe you just need a prompt to figure it out. And so this is my request, Jeff, I know some of your listeners undoubtedly are dealing with cancer right now or will in the near future, but every single one of them loves a cancer patient right now. Every single one of them cares about somebody who has melanoma or glioblastoma or ovarian cancer. And all I ask is, please let them know these resources are available, because they're going to help. They're going to make your person better for it. And I'm really excited to help people dig their way out of those holes.
Okay, I can hear people screaming at me now. Jeff, go on, ask her, go on. What are you waiting for? Ask her. So here we go, Fitz.
Okay.
How do we get hold of your books?
Okay.
You were so all paused and ready for something else then, weren't you?
They will be available wherever books are sold. So my distributor will send them to Amazon, will send them to Barnes & Noble. They will be available worldwide wherever you get books. Now, Noisy comes in an audiobook, and I know a lot of people are into audiobooks. I certainly am. I listen to them and podcasts all day when I'm not writing. But you can get them wherever you are. If you are willing to pay for shipping from abroad or you're in America, fitsness.com is where I prefer you buy the book. So as you know, Amazon takes 55% of everything. So whatever, if you get your book at Amazon, that's fine by me. But fitsness.com, every single book that comes out of my office gets autographed. I sign them all. And if it's a gift, especially, that might be a nice treat. You can get the Cancer Comeback 3-pack, Noisy, Your Healthy Cancer Comeback, and the journal in one pop. I include free gifts with every purchase. I wrap them up in beautiful packaging and try to make it special for the recipient.
Fitsness.com, that's the place to go. Well, as we've already discussed, a successful book is about successful marketing. Because you can write a fantastic book, but if the marketing is not right, if the title is not right, if the chapters are not right, it won't go anywhere. Yeah. So apart from the title and the chapters, what's the process that you go through when you're preparing a book?
It's edit, right? I wrote the book, I got it to a certain point, and that's when I shared it with oncologists, shared it with cancer patients, shared it with registered dietitians and said, specifically, tell me what you hate about this book. That was my demand. Tell me what you hate. Thankfully, none of them hated it. They loved it. But each of them provided a little insight that gave me a fabulous tweak. And the oncologists, one of them loved my supplement chapter, my nutrition chapter. She said, can you add this? And I was like, I'm going to quote you. Yes, I'm quoting you. And so my stage 4 colon cancer patient survivor, he's gave me a great tweak. One of them said, oh, blah, 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 hot yoga. And I said, no. Hot yoga is not a good thing when you're doing chemotherapy and you're dehydrated. Don't go do hot yoga. So I was able, because he mentioned that, to add that into the book. I would have forgotten it. So beta readers, I know they're very valuable and they will make everyone's book better. So if you write a book, please share it with a good dozen people. And again, you're the author, you make the final decisions, but if they have any valuable feedback, take it. Don't have a big ego about it. And I think if you tell people you want them to share what they hate, then you've given them the green light to be honest. They don't have to worry about hurting your feelings. So beta readers, copy editor, and then I go back through it. And then proofers, right now, both books are in the final stages with the designer. I've chosen a graphic designer who, I'm so happy. She's making these books so beautiful. And with the cover of Noisy, I looked at all the other cancer books and they're all gray and they don't have ribbons and they're all macabre and dreary and sad and dark and scary. And who the heck wants that when you've been diagnosed with cancer? I wanted a book that said joy. Here's a comeback story. This is one that will lift you up and give hope. Because I truly believe when you're diagnosed, you look for two things, information and hope. And those dark, dreary books, no thank you. I wouldn't buy them because they gave me no hope. And then these next two books, I'm definitely not on the cover on. And they're vivid. I told the designer, I said, I want bold and happy and vibrant, not pathetic. I don't want any ribbons. I don't want anything cancery. I just want a book that enlightens people up when they catch the title and they say, oh, I'm interested in that. That my healthy cancer comeback. Well, shoot. Sign me up for that. And then it's full color on the inside. So I just want it to be a beautiful, happy experience for the reader. So I'm happy to pay more to have the book be done right. And the journal's full color too. And so that takes a little longer, to do all of this color nonsense. But it's almost done. So it's a lot of work, Jeff, as you know. How many books have you published, Jeff?
Seven.
How many?
Seven.
And how long has each book taken you to write from start to finish, to from start to publish? How long does it go?
Oh, well, here's an interesting one. The first book I wrote was about memory developments, because lots of people were saying you can't remember stuff, especially names and faces. And I decided to write a book, and I wrote it. The writing of the book took me 3 years. Now, here's a very important point. I could have done it in far less time, but I didn't understand how my brain worked. So I'm going to share this with you, because you mentioned about chronology earlier.
Yeah.
And lots of people say, Jeff, when you write a book, where do you begin? At the beginning, do you write the introduction? I say, no, neither. I write the introduction last. Yeah. And they go, oh, wow. And I said, because then I'm informed about what to write about in the introduction. I said, and they went, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So when I'm preparing a book, and I'm writing two at the moment, get this, one of them has a journal.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah. So the first two words I write when I start writing a book are chapter 10.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what that does, let me rewind to when I wrote the book about memory development. I didn't publish that one, by the way. Okay. But I wrote this book, and I thought you'd have to begin at chapter 1, page 1. But my head wasn't there. My head was further down the journey, talking about something more advanced. And I kept putting it off and blocking it and going, no, I need to do chapter 1. And then it just took me so long to write. And I completed in the end, it took 3 years. What lesson did I learn from it? What do I want to share with you now? The reason I write chapter 10 as the first chapter is I don't know what's in my head and what part I want to write first. And I'll say, I'll let the universe do its work to bring it out of me and onto paper, and I write where my head is. And if I'm writing and my head comes out of this chapter onto another chapter, then I'll come out and stop, and then I'll sew the whole thing together. So what happened then? I wrote the first book that I published was in 2001. And then I started writing that in the same way. And then I realized, no, this is not the way. You have to write what you're feeling and experiencing at the time, and then order the chronology or the sequence to it later when you finished. So I set myself a goal of 1 year. I wrote out my goal, and then I was telling everyone, hey, I'm writing this book. And they're going, oh, yeah, great. What's it about? Oh, yeah, it's key performance indicators, business strategy. And you know, Fitz, 3 months had gone by and I had not written a single word. And then I thought, ah, crap, I need to get writing here. So I then got writing, and the powerful thing is my goal kept me on task. And okay. I had it published and in my hand on day 364.
Wow. Well, that's impressive. I like that.
Bear in mind, I hadn't started writing the first 3 months. So there's quite a few lessons in there, in that you don't have to begin at chapter 1, page 1, and write there. You write where you feel like writing, and you organize it later.
Yeah.
The introduction, that comes last.
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And I got to tell you that the pressure, so in the back of your noisy cancer comeback, I put this up, your, up next, your healthy cancer comeback. And that has haunted me since this book was published. I was like, I have to do it. I said I was going to do it, have to do it. And I wanted to do it anyways. But yeah, just that commitment, that public commitment, has really motivated me. I started writing over, it was in 21 when I started writing Your Healthy Cancer Comeback, and it just kind of stagnated. And then maybe in May this year, I got on a tear. And what I find, just like you, is I can only write what I'm motivated to write at the moment. And usually I write on airplanes where I'm like 5 hours across the country. I've got some quiet time to use. And maybe I feel like writing about nutrition. that's what I'm going to write about. Maybe I feel like writing about the four pillars of fitness, whatever it is, but that's how I go at it, much like you, is I for some reason, my brain will only say, okay, we're talking about this topic right now. And so be it, if it's chapter 9 and then chapter 2 and 7 and, you know, and even after I had put them in order, that copy editor says, you know what? I think 4 should come before 6. And I was like, or vice versa. I was like, okay, switch it around. So, we're not so far apart. I imagine all self-published authors especially go through these learning experiences. And then once you learn, you get comfortable doing it whatever way works for you.
Yeah, well, that's the writing process. The self-publication process is something else altogether. Yeah. But I want to backtrack again.
Okay.
You just said, I can only write when I'm motivated to write.
Yes.
So, Fitz Kohler, how do you get motivated to write?
You know what? Only when I have something to say. For some reason, I'll get, you know, I want people to know this. And then I write, I'm exclusively nonfiction. I don't think I have a creative artsy bone in my body. I mean, that's probably not true to some extent, but I get passionate about something and I feel like people need to know that. And then I write it down. So I do get writer's block because of that. I don't want to say can't, because I think that's always a lie, but I'll sit down there at a computer sometimes. And unless I'm feeling soapboxy, nothing comes out.
Okay. I've got a tip for that.
That
used to happen to me. It doesn't happen anymore.
Okay.
The reason writer's block happens is because you don't know or you're not sure what's coming next.
Okay.
So what happens for me, the way I deal with this, I think I want to write, or I feel like I want to write about X subject. And I take the subject as a thought to bed with me. And then I ask a question, what's the best way to write this? And I just let it go.
Okay.
Now, the downside on that for me is my time is about 2 a.m.
So, oh, that's dangerous. Oh, my gosh.
So I get woken up at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., and I'm given the answer. And it's like, oh, hey, I've got it. Now, the thing is, let me say the universe. I mean, we can put religion, we can put God.
Right, whatever.
I just say the universe. If the universe gives you information like that, you must act upon it. You must do something with it. If you don't do anything with it, the universe will simply pass it to somebody else. So I get up at 2 a.m. I come into my office, I switch the computer on, and now we come to the point I wanted to make for you. You get passionate about a subject. You think, okay, I want to write about this. So you have your chapter title, which will probably change later. And then you make 3 or 4 titles within your chapter, which are key points about what that chapter is about.
Yeah.
And you just fill in the gaps. Because you know what's coming next.
Yeah, I think that definitely does help to have an outline. And I've learned to be less willy-nilly about my writing, to say, okay, I'm going to have to talk about nutrition and talk about this and talk about that. But it's, you know what? It's not easy. We can make it easier on ourselves when we follow good advice.
Yeah, I'm great at giving advice. Not so good at following my own.
Well, it's funny what you just described is my nightmare, because that's actually been my burden as a business owner, is my mind not shutting off.
Yeah.
So I'll lie down in bed and become midnight and 1. And the thing that's helped me is to pull out my phone, open the notes section, and write down the thing that's on my mind. And then I can let it go, knowing the prompt will be there for me in the morning, and I can relax because I have faith I won't forget. So I use notes. My notes section, I probably have 300 individual notes, and there's all sorts of gibberish in there. Sometimes I think, what was I saying? But and normally I can make it work.
Yeah, well, as I said, my time is 2 a.m. So I used to be awakened with an idea, and someone said, hey, Jeff, you don't have to get up. You just write it down. And I said, okay. So I had some notepaper and a pad and a pencil at the side of my bed. I'd get awoken at 2 a.m. I have this idea. I note it down and I let it go. I wake up in the morning. Do you think I can read what I've written?
No, of course not.
No, so that idea didn't work out for me. So most often I get up at 2 a.m., wow, come down, do some work, get the idea fleshed out, and then before you know it, it's 10 a.m., and God, time flies, huh? Time flies. It is hard, it is difficult, but let me take you back. You're in a hotel, you're sick, yeah, you're lying on the floor,
yeah,
you're shivering, and then you get up, you stand on the stage, and nobody knows. You come off the stage, and you collapse. How do you do that? It's because you love it. It's, yeah, your purpose. And it's the same for me. So I don't like writing. I don't like getting up at 2 a.m. But I like what the books do for other people. And I've been blessed with this gift. And I consider it that it's my burden, if you wish, to share it. It's what I have to do. So that's why I do it. Not really a choice, but I get up and do it anyway.
Yeah, well, we're fortunate that we do the things we love and apparently are pretty okay at the tasks we pursue, right?
Right, right. So you're in Florida right now, right?
Yes.
And you're coming over here to England in January 2023. What are you doing over here?
So I think I arrived January 20th in Birmingham, and I'm super excited to get there. I am speaking at the National Running Show, which is a massive running conference held at one of your convention centers. I should know. I hear there's quite a few in Birmingham, but the National Running Show, and I'm speaking. And my presentation is called The Noisy American Race Announcing on Steroids. And we're going to have so much flipping fun. So I'm really, my job will take 30 minutes to do while I'm there. That's what I'm hired for, to come over and speak for 30 minutes. I'm hoping to be far more engaged than that in the conference, because we have 35,000 tickets have already been sold.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to meeting as many English runners and race directors. You know, I have an extraordinary race announcing career here in US. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'm the busiest race announcer. But I would like to come and announce some races in Europe as well. Awesome. Why not? I used to travel through Europe quite a bit. And I actually lived in England for a few months, but I'd like to come back. My kids are old enough that they can handle life without me being right near them, and they have a great dad, and so I'm raring to go.
Okay, so what does a race announcer actually do?
So I am the voice of these massive events. So if you're a runner, I'll say just for the actual race portion, is when you arrive on race morning, you'll hear music playing. It's mine. I actually mix it up custom, very fun, energetic music. So you show up and you start feeling good. And then I greet you. I say, hi, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to the OC Marathon or whatever it is. I get people engaged. I get them informed. And then I do a heck of a lot of entertaining, and I think all three of those are important. I want everyone to feel like they're a part of our event, whether we have 3,000 or 20,000 or 50,000, every last person should know that we are happy they're there. And you know, if I've done my job, by the time it's start of race time, everyone feels like they're a part of a team, right? We're all part of this big running team, and they feel good to be there. And I whip everybody into a frenzy, and I bellow go, and they take off. And sometimes it takes 25 minutes for all the runners to get through the start line, which is great, because they come by waving and jumping and dancing, and it's just joy. And I get pelted in the face with their joy. It's so much fun. It's such a happy experience. And of course, I'm pelting them back in their faces with my joy, because I'm so happy to be with them. So it's the start lines are my favorite, because it's the only time we're all together, and just the raucous, happy sounds are magic. And then so they go run their race, and either if the start line is the same place as the finish line, I stay put and wait, or I'll get a ride to the finish line. And then when the first athlete comes through, I make a royal stink and make sure that person gets their champions welcome. And then I continue that. Technology allows me to welcome almost every athlete by name. I know their age, their hometown, sometimes other details. But as the race progresses, as the final finishers come, I think it gets even more exciting because sometimes the champion won't even put his hands up. He's like, whatever, I got my paycheck, I'm out of here. Life-changing. You know, you get through the middle and the back of the pack, that's where the lives are changes. That's where the tears come. And, you know, I love all of our athletes, but I prefer the slow pokes. They're just so gritty. And everybody knows it's far more difficult to run a 7-hour marathon than a 3-hour marathon. Those 7-hour people, they've got such mental fortitude to keep their bodies going the whole way. So I just pour love and love and love. So many times I get off my stage, I run around the chute, people are hugging me before they finish. I fall deeply in love with them. And it's sometimes it's a 1 mile distance or a 3-5K or the marathon. It's wonderful. It's such a blessing. And then on race weekend, I host the VIP parties. I normally teach clinics. I'm a sport performance expert. I host the pasta party, you know, whatever we can do to keep our athletes involved, I do.
Okay. So we've spoken a lot about cancer.
Yes.
Fortunately, not all of us have cancer, but we all suffer from something called getting old.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And as we get old, we might be that person that goes to the gym and has the same experience that you had. So, when I was a young buck, I could do this. Now, oh my goodness, I'm nowhere near. And I'm giving up, I'm going. So let's talk about that then. How do we get or keep in shape or begin to get in shape? Because now we're in the new year, right? Gyms are busiest January, but then people, they give up by February and the New Year's resolutions have all gone. So what's the answer to all of this?
The answer is to just start where you are. I mean, you simply can't be anything or any place other than where you are. And so your priority is to just make your body slightly better today. What can you do today to do better and be better? You know, for some people, it might be a walk to the mailboxes more than they've done in forever. Okay, fine. Let that be it. Maybe it's a walk around the block. Maybe it's you get in the pool and you dance around for a while, or you do one push-up, or you do 25 push-ups, depending on where you are. I think it's foolish to compare yourself to who you used to be 20 years ago. I mean, you can. What I don't know what good it does, you know, crying over spilt milk. If you've been failing in fitness for 3 years, okay, well, change that. It's all very doable, but you just have to start. You know, you have to know how to start. So hopefully you have someone who's been giving you the accurate information on how exercise works. I'm going to give you real quick strength, flexibility, cardiovascular, and balance. Those are your four pillars of fitness. If you do not have one of them, you are not considered fit. And so before you think about running a marathon or joining a pickleball team, let's just talk about fitness in general. You know, if you're a marathon runner who can't do 5 push-ups, are you really fit? If you're a bodybuilder who can't touch his toes, are you really fit? No. So cardio, that's huff and puff, strength, you get stronger, all your muscles. You don't have to be as strong as The Rock. You just have to be a little stronger than you were yesterday. And then you keep working on that. Flexibility matters for everybody. You know, nobody ever says, oh, my back is stiff, and means it in a good way. I was like, oh, it's so stiff. I love it. Not the way that works, though. You know, bend and reach. Your shoulder girdle, for example, goes in this really wild, wide motion. Most people only move their shoulder like here. So move your body, move your legs, your hips do the same thing. So keep your body moving, stretch in a way that makes you wince. You know, by the time you get to that little right there, that means you're making progress. Do balance training, stand on one foot. You can do that with no effort. Fine. Do it and close your eyes. So as fitness is, it's not so complicated. I say it all the time. My master's degree is in the most simple, stupid science in the world. Move your body, watch what you put in your mouth, get some sleep, remove the cranky people. But again, with fitness, you just start where you are, do a little more, tack on 1 minute a day, tack on one extra move a day, just more, more where, in whatever capacity you choose, When it comes to nutrition, the exact formula for weight loss is on the cover of fitsness.com. There is no diet pill powder supplement that will work for you and give you long-term benefits. So don't waste your money. Don't waste your time. Don't invest in that type of suffering, miserable experience. Just learn to eat the right amount of the right food for the size you want to be. Again, it's exact formula for weight loss. It's on the cover of fitsness.com and it's free. Just read it. And then you'll go, oh, I can't believe it's so simple. And then if you follow up and do what I tell you to do, you'll get where you want to go. Sleep's very important. Tired people tend to be cranky. They tend to skip their workouts. They tend to make terrible decisions with exercise and nutrition. Same thing for alcohol. If you drink too much, it's going to affect your sleep. It's going to make you less likely to exercise and likely going to inspire you to eat horribly. So, you know, you don't have to be perfect. Perfect is boring. I'm not perfect. I know Jeff looks perfect. He's not perfect. You just have to be a better version of yourself. And if you keep working on that, eventually you'd be really happy with who you are. And, you know, I'm 40 something pounds less than I was in college, which is what, many stones. That's a lot of stones. And I had an eating disorder and I just learned. I learned the right way to do things. And when I did learn the right thing, I thought, oh, it can't be that simple. And then it was. And I was so grateful that I was one of the people who understood how weight management really works. And I really like living in a body that feels good. It matters. You know, it's not just about looking great in a swimsuit. I think when we were 16, maybe that was a priority. But as you become a grown-up, you have more realistic expectations. You don't want your back to hurt, right? Maybe you want a better posture. So someone's going to be more likely to hire you. You know, first impressions are made in 7 seconds. Does somebody look at you and say, he's a real go-getter, or she's a powerhouse, I want to work with her? And if they don't, well, you can make those changes.
Awesome. I love all of that. I'm so inspired.
Good.
Okay. So I have the big question for you now. So this is a question that I ask every guest who comes onto the show. Are you ready?
Yes.
Fitz Kohler, what is the most important thing you have ever learned?
Always associate up.
Okay, what does that mean?
That means if you hang with people better than you, you will do better.
Oh, yes. One of my favorite subjects, that.
you hang out with people that are do bad things or say bad things or are lazy or, you know, any of those things, they will drag you down. So I pursue people that will lift me up. Anyone better than me? Yes. I want to be the low person on the totem pole wherever I am.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Wonderful. So just one more time then. If people want to buy your books, reach out to you, get your DVDs, get help from you, how do we reach you?
Everyone, visit fitsness.com. That's F-I-T-Z as in zebra, N as in Nancy, E-S-S.com. That's my headquarters. Everything is at fitsness.com. Books and all. And then I am at Fitsness on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. You can find me on LinkedIn. And I would absolutely love it, not only if you followed, but I'd really prefer it if you reached out and follow and then send a message and say, hey, I heard you on Secrets of Success podcast and I wanted to connect, because I would much rather have friends than followers.
Absolutely. I love that. Well, that is it for today. Fitz Kohler, you have been truly amazing. You know, I'm in love with who you are.
Aww.
You know, when we always have a chat, well, I always have a chat with a guest before we do the show to make sure the right fit. You'd been talking about 10 seconds and I said, okay, stop, you're on.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. You've been wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. You've been absolutely wonderful. And to you, the listener, thank you for listening to Secrets of Success. I hope the show has helped to ignite your passion, to be a catalyst for action, and given you the fuel that you need to realize your dreams. If you've enjoyed the show, please hit the follow button, leave a review, and most importantly, share. even if it's only with one person, particularly this episode, because I guess it's true what you said, Fitz. We all pretty much know someone or love someone that's going through the journey of cancer. And perhaps this episode will help them in more ways that we can think of. So go ahead, share the show with someone. It really does make a huge difference. And without your help, we can't succeed. So please go ahead. Hit the follow button. Hit the like button. Leave a review. And most importantly, share the podcast with a friend or someone you love. On another note, I'm always searching for great success stories. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show, or you'd like to nominate a guest, please contact me on our website at jeff-smith.com. I really would love to hear from you. And thank you again, Fitz Kohler. You have been amazing. Thank you so much for today.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. Well, that's all from me. Thank you again for listening and have a great day.